ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः Good. Nice to see you all. This topic is related to something that we'll discuss later in our Mahabharata class. We get some reference to the avatars, the incarnations, especially incarnations of Lord Vishnu. And I'd like to speak a little bit about how we understand avatars and how it relates to meditation. And we're going to find a very nice connection here in just a moment. The best way to understand avatara, incarnation of God in the Hindu tradition, is this. You are incarnated, why? Because of your karma. So because of having done deeds in past lives, and because you have not yet received all the results of those deeds committed in past lives, those deeds must yield their results. So for the sake of receiving those results of your past deeds, you are driven by the laws of nature, including the laws of karma, to take another birth. Hence, we're all sitting here today. Of course, now when we start to consider Lord Vishnu, not exactly like you and me, an individual person who does karma, so that wouldn't work at all to explain avatara. You can't say that Lord Vishnu did some deeds in the prior life. Lord Vishnu is eternal. Any form of Ishvara is beginningless, so therefore no succession of births. So then how shall we explain it? It's still based on a doctrine of karma, and here's how we understand it. You have what we call individual karma, vyashti karma. And as a result of your individual karma, you are born as an individual being. Suppose there were a very unusual situation in which there were a large group of people who all shared a particular kind of karma. That's a poor way of explaining it. Suppose there was a large group of people who performed certain deeds, prayerful deeds, pious deeds, of such magnitude, of such intensity, that the only way for this group of people to receive the results of their intense pious deeds, the only way for that karma to be fulfilled would be for Ishvara himself to take a form and come down to this human realm. This is how, this is a little bit of a technical explanation according to the doctrine of karma, about how it is that an avatara takes birth, not based on Ishvara's karma, based on your karma. And this is said clearly, you know, the famous verses quoted in chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya sambhavami yuge yuge. Yada yada, whenever. Dharmasya glanihi, whenever there is the decline of dharma, and abhyutanam, and the rise, adharmasya, of adharma, then Sri Krishna, speaking as Lord Vishnu, he says, sambhavami, I am born, yuge, yuge, in each yuga, based on the decline of dharma, based on the rise of adharma. And the factor that's not mentioned right there is this. When there is the decline of dharma and the rise of adharma, good people pray more. It's like when you see problems in your family, you pray more. When you see problems in your country, you pray more. When you see problems in a culture, you pray more. That's the subtext of that verse. So, based on the samashti karma, vyashti karma is your individual karma, samashti karma is this aggregate karma of all good people. Due to their prayers, there is a unique incarnation of Ishvara, in this case Lord Vishnu, in the form of Rama, Krishna, etc., as an avatara. We'll see some of the other avataras in our Mahabharata class. Just some comments here to introduce our meditation angle, as it were. He says, yada, yada, he says whenever. Does he say on 10 occasions? Because typically we speak of 10 incarnations of Lord Vishnu, but Sri Krishna doesn't say only 10 times, not 11. No, yada, yada, whenever. The implication then being is that 10 is not a fixed number. In fact, Bhagavata Purana gives in another place, gives a list of 24. You can find other references to thousands and thousands. So we have to kind of recalibrate our understanding of avatara. We can't so narrowly think of incarnations in terms of these 10 that are so well known to us all. In fact, there's another aspect of incarnation that is not often discussed at all. It's an aspect called amsha avatara. Amsha is the opposite of purna. Purna avatara, complete incarnation. Rama was a complete incarnation. Krishna was a complete incarnation. Purna avatara. But in a tradition, there is the possibility of what is called an amsha avatara, a partial incarnation. Amsha means part. So amsha or amshika, a partial incarnation of Lord Vishnu, which would mean an incarnation of Lord Vishnu without all those magnificent powers and capacities. What would that be like, a partial incarnation of Lord Vishnu without all the powers and capacities that we associate with the other 10 incarnations? Well, tell me, does Lord Vishnu abide in the heart of the person sitting in your chair? Huh. Ishvara abides in us all. You've heard this so many times. Ishvara abides in you and me. So in a manner of speaking, we could all be considered amsha avataras, partial incarnations. Now, if that's true, the Purna avatara has a responsibility to fulfill the karmas of that whole group of people who were praying. Then by extension, an amsha avatara, like you and me, have the responsibility to fulfill a smaller group of karmas. And remember, these karmas we're talking about are prayers of good people who are suffering because of the decrease of dharma and increase of adharma. They pray, and their prayers must be answered. So if there are enough people praying, they're answered through a purna avatara, like Rama and Krishna. But if a few people are praying, excuse me, like the people in your family, like the people in your life, then you are born as an amsha avatara to fulfill their prayers. That's interesting. Just as the God of the cosmos is born to fulfill everyone's prayers, you are born in part to fulfill these prayers of others, to help others, just as Purana Avatara blesses all people. You are born in part to bless others. And here, first of all, I think it's a very dramatic and interesting perspective that as Amsha Avataras, we are born with that purpose. That purpose of being a blessing for others. Not being a pain in the neck as we can sometimes be. So we're intended to be a blessing to others. Now, there comes a problem. And let me just make a funny story about this. Suppose, you know, Rama was a child, and I think, I think it was Vasishtha who came and said, all these rishis are being tortured by the Rakshasas, so we want young Rama and Lakshmana to go and protect them. Suppose Rama were to say, no, I'm too busy playing. Or later, when Sita gets kidnapped, he says, oh, I'm too busy hunting to go and rescue her. Or Sri Krishna says, Kamsa is causing all this harm in Mathura. And Krishna says, now I'm having too much fun playing with the gopis. So I'm making a silly observation here about the Purna Avatara who responded immediately and fully to the responsibilities at hand, the responsibilities which were due to the samashti karma. So you can probably see where this is going. And that is, in your life, there's such a thing as vyashti karma, and referring specifically to the needs of those around you. Family members, other people in your life, and maybe even society in a general sense. Problem is, sometimes we're too busy to recognize those needs and respond appropriately to those needs. We're busy with our own stuff, as we say in American English. We're too busy with our own agendas, doing what we want to do, fulfilling our own personal needs, wants, and desires. And because we're absorbed in ourselves, not in a good way, when I say absorbed in ourselves, I don't mean absorbed in Lord Vishnu's presence in our heart. I mean absorbed in our personal needs, wants, and desires. To that extent that we are self-absorbed in that selfish, self-interested way. To that extent, then, we're not able to respond to the needs of others around us. Problem. So, what can we do to become more aware of our, divine disposition? How's that? Divine disposition means that inner divinity is a fact about you and me and every living being. And given the fact that there is an inner divinity, along with that inner divinity probably come some responsibilities to help others around you. What can we do to become more aware of that inner divinity and our responsibility to reach out to others who need help, who need support? Well, meditation is a great way of doing that, to turn our attention within to discover that inner divinity. Now, when I say discover that inner divinity, I most certainly don't mean that you close your eyes and turn your attention within and you'll discover in your heart Lord Vishnu with his four arms standing there glowing with blue light as you often see in these pictures. I don't think so. I mean, you may have that experience, and it's wonderful, but that's not what we're talking about here. Inner divinity means what? When your mind becomes sufficiently quiet, you'll discover that what remains is an inner fullness, an inner sense of completeness, of vastness, of perfection. Generally, we're not aware of that inner fullness and vastness and perfection. But in meditation, when your mind is sufficiently quiet, that becomes quite obvious. That inner fullness, we call it ananda. That ananda within becomes really obvious in meditation when you can make your mind sufficiently quiet. That ananda is the inner divinity. When we say divinity is within, this is what the sages meant. Satchit ananda atma, your true nature, your true self, which is ananda surupa, your true nature being, full, complete, vast, limitless, divine. So, in meditation, we can take up a mantra, use that mantra as a tool to make our minds quiet. That's a function. That's one of the main functions of a mantra, not the only function, but a main function of the mantra is as a tool. By the way, mantra, the very word mantra, that tra ending means tool, a tool for the manas, mind. So mantra is a tool for your mind, in particular, a device to help make your mind quiet for the sake of appreciating that inner divinity. And perhaps when we're more aware of that inner divinity, we'll be more engaged in expressing that inner divinity by reaching out to others around us who need help. The mantra we'll use today, very appropriate to our discussion, a mantra to Lord Vishnu as Vasudeva. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I won't write it on a board. We've used this many times. Om, invoking Ishvara. Namo, the word is Namaha, salutations. Bhagavate means to Bhagavan, salutations to the Lord. Which form of the Lord? Vasudevaya, unto Vasudeva. Vasudeva is perfect here because it has several meanings. It's a name for Lord Krishna. It's also a word that refers directly to Lord Vishnu. And its etymology suggests the one who abides within you. The Sanskrit root vas means to live, to dwell. So Vasudeva is loosely interpreted as the Lord that dwells within you, that inner divinity. So by chanting this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, we use that mantra as a tool to make our minds increasingly quiet so that we have an opportunity to discover that inner divinity, that ananda, that fullness, that completeness, limitlessness, which is your true nature, which is available here now, but right now our minds are too extrovert to appreciate it so much. So in meditation, we create a situation where you can better appreciate that inner divinity. And the ultimate goal is this: to the extent that you recognize your inner divinity, to that extent, you can be perhaps more engaged in expressing that inner divinity as help and service to those around you. Okay, let us prepare ourselves for meditation.